من شكر اومه گنه تمنندس يا زنا زنا صلاتا يا تكسس ملتن زنا تاس ما سويگر وينما سويج هيتن من ابي ستامز تو بيتم زنا بوتلي سايم بوتلا مايام بدتي ساب ننتيكا من شكر بتوبيس يا كوي سند باي بجا Is that going to Ty's phone? Whoever it was, turn it off, please. Unless it was going to Ty's. They can keep it on. Manish kapa tubias cha kripa sindhu bayi vaja apetita nam bhamini bhyo paishma yo namo nama. That's not a Nokia. Huh? Okay. So kind, so I could say all the prayers again. Once a couple of just people in the way that's a petite number, but believe you, by Sunday, you know, one of them. Yesterday we heard how Krishna, while lifting Govardhan Hill, was enjoying so many pastimes with the residents of Vrindavan, and practically speaking, that is why he lifted the hill. That was one of the three reasons. One was to crush the pride of Indra, because that pride got in the way of his spiritual advancement. Second was so that we could observe the blissful festival of Govardhan Puja each year. And the third reason was so for seven that Krishna could for 7 days have pastimes and be with his beloved devotees, the residents of Vrindavan. In the beginning of the class yesterday, I read from the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita to show two things, basically. First was how amazing it is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that all-powerful person who is the Bhumirapo Nalovayu Kammanavura Evacha, he is the source of all the material elements. He's also the source of Parya Idam Idas Tvanyam Prakriti Biname Tvayam. He's also the source of all these spiritual potencies. He's everything. He's the intelligence or the wisdom of the wise, the ability in man. Everything, this all-powerful person, he's under, holding up Govardhan Hill. Just playing with his devotees. This is the most incredible conception, full conception of God, of the Param Ishwara, of the Supreme Person. Because otherwise, if we don't have a full conception of Krishna and understand that it is Krishna's Leela that contains the Adiras, the origin of all relationships, janmadyasya yataha, that everything is springing from him. Even all the relationships that we see in the material world have their relationship with Krishna in their ultimate form. If we don't understand the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, on one hand, we will never, of course, be able to go to the spiritual world to join our relationship with him, because without that sambandha gyan, we will have no guidelines and understanding where to make our goal. And secondly, without understanding the nature of the Supreme Person, we must become attracted to the material world. We'll see the material world as somehow separate from Krishna, and therefore meant for our enjoyment, rather than seeing it in relationship with Krishna. and therefore meant for his enjoyment. Really speaking, there is nothing in the material world meant for our enjoyment, and the proof is that no one since the beginning of time has successfully enjoyed anything in the material world. We try like anything, but the pleasures that we get ultimately dukkha yonai evite, they become sources of misery. And then, even if we accumulate some things that we consider the source of our happiness, then on our deathbed we're so attached to them, and it's inevitable that we're going to leave them behind, and that's another kind of pain. And then we see what someone else has, and we want it, imagining we'll get pleasure from it. We become envious, and that's another kind of pain. Because where in the world will we look where we don't see people who have what we don't have, what we don't have and what we want? Another kind of pain. So pain, 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 pain. We cannot enjoy the material world. Might as well just accept it. Either that, or we can try our best and learn that way. But might as well just accept it. Dukkha yona yevate. And if we can accept it, but we can't, our desires are too strong, then we should engage the material world in such a way that we act properly using it and don't go against the principles of Krishna consciousness, but use whatever material situation we're in to move towards Krishna. So that was one of the reasons why I read these verses of the seventh chapter, to show this is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's all powerful, and yet he's playing with the resonance of Vrindavan. That is to make us think, what have the resonance of Vrindavan done to gain the ability and the facility to be so intimately connected with this all-powerful, all-attractive, all-blissful person, and thereby raise their own bliss? And what they have done was the second reason, because we should see that the perfection that the Brijbasis have attained is the same methodology and the same things that are described in the Bhagavad Gita. Because Krishna says at the end of the sixth chapter, which we mentioned, Shradavan Bhajate Yo Mam, the yogi who's always meditating and worship with full faith, and bhajate yo mam, working and serving Krishna with love and devotion, he is the best of all. Well, who has more faith and serves Krishna with more love and devotion than the residents of Vrindavan? There's no one. So it's mentioned here, but they are the perfection of everything. So even in the first verse of the seventh chapter, I will tell you, Krishna says, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. And because the residents of Vrindavan have full consciousness of Krishna, no other thought can even enter their minds, like no darkness can enter into a fully sunlit room. So the residents of Vrindavan know Krishna fully, more full than anyone, because their absorption in being full consciousness of Krishna is greater than everyone's. And out of many thousands, and what to speak of, I shall now declare unto you this full knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous, spiritual and material, or material and spiritual. Thus being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. So, because the residents of Vrindavan know Krishna so intimately, there is nothing more for them to know. They know everything because they know Krishna. And then, out of thousands amongst men, one may endeavor for perfection. Out of those who have attained perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Well, who knows Krishna in truth more than the residents of Vrindavan. They know him so intimately. And then there's all the description of the material energies. And then Krishna says, O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me is pearls on a thread. The Vrindavan devotees, the Vrijvasis, they know this about Krishna. But they don't even care. Their love for him is so dominant. The Aishwarya, Gyan, the knowledge of Krishna's opulence, is pushed beneath the surface by the power of their sweet Madhurya Ras, the sweetness of their Ras. In fact, all the relationships of Krishna, usually we think of Madhurya Ras, this meaning the conjugal relationship with Krishna. But actually all the relationships with Krishna and Vrindavan are called Madhurya Ras. Sweet, sweeter than the sweetest. So one by one, the verses really describe the process of Krishna consciousness, that the residents of Vrindavan have perfected to such a degree due to their great surrender and their kritta punja punja, their unlimited piety, and even this divine energy of mind consisting, what's this verse of the three modes of material nature? Daivi esha gunamayi mama maya dharateya. Difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So who is more surrendered to Krishna than the residents of Vrindavan? They don't know anything but him. They've given him everything. They've placed him more than anyone else in the center of existence. They don't care about anything else. Their bhakti is of the highest level. And then others return to Krishna. And after many, many births, the jnanis, they know Krishna, the jnanis surrender to Krishna, knowing him as the source of everything, the cause of all causes. Such a great soul is rare. So so after many, many births, after these jnanis attain at most shantaras, even if they go to Vrindavan, they're in shantaras or just passive. So how much greater still are the residents of Vrindavan and their attainment? And there's no, and the only, and when the Vrijvasis worship the demigods, they do that even to come closer to Krishna, to perfect their service. Not to go to the demigods, their only desire is to go to Krishna. And then, practically, finally, Krishna says, persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are free from the dualities of delusion. They engage themselves in my service with determination. There is no one who is more determined to serve Krishna than the residents of Vrindavan. Again, they don't know anything. There's nothing of value to them. They're willing to give their lives hundreds and hundreds of times to please Krishna. Their love is so dominant. So how pious. They're unlimitedly pious. And we can say, at least I can say, because my determination to serve the Supreme Lord is so weak, unlimitedly impious. I've saw vyavya satmika buddhi bahu shaka twanantascha. So many branches are the tree of my desire. So very unfortunate. But the residents of Vrindavan, on the other hand, they're the most pious because their only desire, there's not the slightest room for any other desire within their consciousness to serve Krishna. So in this way, all the processes that are described even in the basic scriptures like Bhagavad Gita really glorify the residents of Vrindavan as well. Because again, they don't know anything but Krishna. Their love for him is it not only dominates, it's comp- completely overtakes. It is their consciousness. Their consciousness is Vrindavan. Srimati Radharani Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Srimati Radharani, said, "My consciousness is Vrindavan, so therefore place your lotus feet there because you are so fond of Vrindavan." So this is the perfection of consciousness. This is the attainment of all attainments. This is the purpose of human life. This is what Srila Prabhupada was inspiring us to attain. This is what Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu wanted to distribute and did distribute. This is what Krishna wants of us. So, therefore, we should take it according to our capacity, but we should take it. So, after Krishna put down the hill, and everyone just simply was absorbed. Just imagine. This is the proper use of imagination. Just imagine the residents of Vrindavan with Krishna, just staring at him, looking at his beautiful, unlimitedly sweet form for the 7 days. Their consciousness was fully absorbed in him and nothing else. And he was exchanging love with them continuously. And then he put down the hill. Everyone exchanged some affection with him. And then he went with the cowherd boys and the cows to herd the cows. And what do you think? He went, but what do you think was in their mind? Only and continuously. Krishna. Krishna, and then Krishna, and then Krishna, and Krishna, and Krishna, and Krishna. This is the nature of love. Their love for him simply increased by that proximity. Not like if with people that we have affection for in this world, if we're with them too much, what's the contemporary expression? I need my own space, and that space must be very large, and you can't be in it, go away. But it wasn't like that with Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna filled every single space continuously. He was even in their hearts continuously. He was inside, he was outside. Anta bahir avastitaha. So when Krishna left this chapter, the 26th chapter, the cowherd men approached Nanda Maharaj because they had something on their mind. So the first verse describes, the cowherd men were astonished when they saw Krishna's activities, such as lifting Govardhan Hill. Unable to understand his transcendental potency, they approached Nanda Maharaj and spoke as follows. After all, this young 5-6-year-old boy had just lifted this huge hill to protect them from Indra, and they were so absorbed in looking at him that consciousnesses were so full of love during the time under the hill. They weren't thinking practically, how is this possible? And Madhu Mangal was joking, saying, I'm doing all this by my brahminical tejas, my brahminical power, and the cowherd men are putting their sticks up to help. But after, they began to consider things because their mind was just filled with Krishna. So they spoke as follows to Nanda Maharaj. Here is the purport here, which mostly speaks the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this verse as follows. During Lord Krishna's pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill, Sri Govardhan Hill, the cowherd men simply enjoyed the spiritual bliss of the Lord's activities without analyzing them. But afterwards, when they had returned to their homes, perplexity arose within their minds, hearts. Thus they thought, now we have directly seen child Krishna lift Govardhan Hill. And we remember how he killed Putana and other demons, extinguished the forest fire, and so on. At the time, we thought that these extraordinary acts occurred because of a benediction from the Brahmins, or because of Nanda Maharaj's great fortune, or that perhaps this boy had achieved the mercy of Lord Narayan and was thus empowered by him. But all these presumptions are false, because an ordinary 7-year-old boy could never hold up the king of mountains. King of mountain means Giri, and king means Raj, Giriraj. Could never hold up Giriraj for 7 whole days. Krishna, this is their conclusion, is not a human being. He must be the Supreme Lord himself. This is what they began to think. But on the other hand, child Krishna loves it when we cuddle him. And he becomes morose when we, his uncles and well-wishers, simply worldly coward men, do not give him attention. He appears to become hungry and thirsty. On one hand, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, he's so dependent on our affection, he gets hungry, he gets thirsty. He steals yogurt and milk, and sometimes plays tricks. He tells lies. He chatters childishly and tends the calves. If he's actually the Supreme Lord, why would he do these things? Don't they indicate he's an ordinary human child? On one hand, he lifted up Govardhan Hill. On the other hand, he does these human-like activities, including lying and stealing butter. Are these the activities that the Supreme Personality of God would do? So on the other hand, it appears that he's a human, ordinary human child. So we're totally unable to establish the truth of his identity. Who is this Krishna? Therefore, let us go and inquire from the highly intelligent king of Braja, Nanda Maharaj, and he shall free us from our doubts. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the cowherd men thus made up their minds, and they entered. Then they entered Nanda Maharaj's great assembly hall, and they questioned him as described in the following verse. The cowherd men said, "Since this boy performs such extraordinary activities, how could he warrant a birth amongst worldly men like us, a birth that for him would seem contemptible?" In other words, such an exalted person, we would expect to be born in an exalted family, not in the family of simple worldly men like cowherd men, mercantile men. Actually, the Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, I think there's a short comment here. My hymn. What a dilemma they were in. The coward men said, "Since this boy has performed such astonishing activities, he cannot be an ordinary boy, but he must be God. But if that is so, how can he be born in a coward family and become the object of criticism?" So many people, Krishna's stolen butter, Krishna's done this, Krishna's done that. Even the minor avatars, the incarnations, they are not born in low families as ours, what to speak of an outstanding avatar. They're always born in Kshatriya families or Brahmin families. The use of the word asau to denote Krishna indicates that he was not present, because he had gone to the forest. What was he doing in the forest? Engaging in the activities of cowherding with his friends and the cowherd boys. He wasn't there. And therefore, the full expression of their feelings could take place only in Krishna's absence. So they were free to speak as they wanted. Now, in the third verse, what they're thinking is basically what we've been saying. In the third verse all the way to the 14th verse, they're saying, he's done this amazing thing, but how is it possible that he's done activities that only the Supreme Lord could perform? So it's not possible for him to perform these activities unless he's the Supreme Lord, except that he's an ordinary boy. in so many ways. So each of the verses from 3 onward to 14, basically we can think that they're saying, well, how could he possibly do this unless he's the Supreme Lord? How could he perform this astonishing feat? So the third verse, how could this 7-year-old boy, this is the first thing that's on their mind because they just saw it, playfully hold up the great hill Govardhan with one hand, just as a mighty elephant holds up a lotus flower? How could he do this unless he's the Supreme Lord? As a mere infant, a second incident, who had hardly yet opened his eyes, and all the cowherd, all the residents of Gokul, they saw this, they personally witnessed this. Before he could even open his eyes, he was 3 months old. He drank the breast milk of the powerful demoness Putana and then sucked out her very life as well, just as the force of time sucks out the youth of one's body. Something to keep in mind. Here's the purport here. The word vaya in this verse, because of course that energy, that time is Krishna's shakti, his potency. So Krishna gives it that energy. The word vaya in this verse indicates youth or lifespan in general. With irresistible power, time takes away our life. And that time is actually Lord Krishna himself. He says this in the Bhagavad Gita, I am time, time I am. Kalosvin, lokachaya kit. Thus, in the case of the powerful witch Putana, Lord Krishna accelerated the time process and within an instant withdrew the duration of her life. Here the cowherd men mean to say, how could a mere infant who could barely open his eyes so easily kill a powerful demoness? How is this possible? Unless he's the Supreme Lord. But that brings him to the other position. He lies, he cheats, he does this, he that. He's an ordinary boy. He's so dependent on her affection. He's always demanding attention. And he's born in a lower family. How is this possible? Once, when only 3 months old, little Krishna was crying and kicking up his feet as he lay beneath a huge cart. Then the cart fell and turned upside down simply because it was struck by the tip of his toe. How is that possible? At the age of 1, while sitting peacefully, he was taken up into the sky by the demon Trinavarta. But baby Krishna grabbed the demon's neck, causing him great pain, and thus killed him. Krishna actually, as the acharyas explain, wanted to go for a ride high into the sky, and therefore this pastime was arranged. But yet the coward men saw that the demon was killed and Krishna was left just playing there. How could he have done this? Purport. The coward men who loved Krishna as an ordinary child were astonished by all these activities. A newborn infant cannot ordinarily kill a powerful witch, and one would hardly think that a 1-year-old baby could kill a demon who has kidnapped him and carried him up to the sky. But Krishna did all of these wonderful things, and the coward men were enhancing their love for him by remembering and discussing his activities. They continue. Once his mother tied him with ropes to a mortar because she had caught him stealing butter. Then crawling on his hands, he dragged the mortar between 2 pairs of Arjun trees. And Arjun trees, even in this day and age, they're 20 to 30 meters tall, and they're very, very thick and dense trees. And Krishna pulled a pair of these huge trees down. Can a naughty, ordinary boy do this? How is this possible? Another time, when Krishna was tending the calves in the forest together with Balaram and the coward boys, the demon Bakasura came with the intention of killing Krishna. But Krishna seized this inimical demon, it was a crane, by the mouth. He seized him and split his mouth apart and tore him apart. desiring to kill Krishna, text 9. The demon Vatsa, calf, disguised himself as a calf and entered amongst Krishna's calves. But Krishna killed the demon and, using his body, enjoyed the sport of knocking down the kapita fruits down from the trees. A particular type of, maybe some wood apple or some elephant apple or something. It has a particular type of fruit. So he did that with this Vatsasura. How could he have killed him? Together with Lord Balaram, Krishna killed the Dhanukasura, the jackass demon, and all his friends, thereby securing the safety of the Talavan forest, which abounded with fully ripened palm fruits. Purport. Long ago, the powerful demon Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were born of the goddess Diti. Therefore, demons are commonly called Daityas or Daityas, meaning descendants of Diti. Dhanukasura, the As demon, terrorized the Tala forest with his friends, but Sri Krishna and Sri Balaram killed them, just as modern governments kill terrorists who harass innocent people. They're contemporary. After arranging for the mighty Lord Balaram to kill the terrible demon Pralamba, that was Krishna's arrangement in Bandiravan, Krishna saved Braj's cowherd boys and their animals from a forest fire. Krishna swallowed an entire forest fire. And how do the cowherd men know about all these things? Because the cowherd boys, as were the gopis, they were expert. They would observe the pastimes of Krishna and turn it into poems and songs and sing about them as they came back from the forest. And all day long, they would just sing about Krishna. And this way, they were fully absorbed in thoughts about Krishna. So Krishna swallowed up that forest fire, which became like a drop by the influence of Yoga Maya. So the cowherd boys told the cowherd men about this. How is this possible that he's done it? Another impossible pastime that everyone in Vrindavan witnessed. Krishna chastised the most poisonous serpent, whose name was Kaliya. And after humbling him, he drove him forcibly from the lake of the Jamuna. In this way, the Lord made the water of that river free of the snake's powerful poison. Dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braja cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us as well? All these points simply do not fit together. On one hand, this boy is only 7 years old. On the other hand, we see that he's lifted the great hill Govardhan. Therefore, O King of Braja, a doubt about your son arises within us. What is that doubt? Is he an ordinary boy, or is he the Supreme Lord? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, in astonishment, they repeat their statement about Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. They mention that right in the beginning because it was so close to their mind. And yet they're repeating it again because they're amazed by what Krishna has done. And Srila Jiva Goswami says, is he some understanding? They're asking, perhaps he's some demigod or he's some other being? Could it be that he's just a boy? And Srila Sridhar Swami comments on this text 14, as follows, probably a very short comment. They dramatize with amazement what they have already stated in the verses beginning Kasapta Hanana. So they're dramatizing this, and in this way, they're completely absorbed by talking about Krishna with great love and affection, being so attracted to him and knowing that Krishna is so attracted to them. They're absorbed completely in Krishna consciousness. So now Nanda Maharaj is going to begin his reply to their question. Nanda Maharaj replied, this is text 15, "O coward men, just hear my words and let all your doubts concerning my son be gone. Some time ago, Gaugamuni spoke to me as follows about these boy, about this boy." So, purport. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, "The word previously heard about Gargacharja awakened Nanda Maharaj to the truth about Krishna, because Nanda Maharaj was usually just absorbed in thinking of Krishna as his son. But their questions made him remember the words that Gargamuni, Gargacharja, had given at the time of the birth ceremony, the name-giving ceremony of Krishna, and especially Krishna here. So in remembering what Gargacharja had said, he remembered that Krishna was indeed not an ordinary boy. So it had awakened Nanda Maharaj to the truth about Krishna, and thus by Nanda's constantly remembering Krishna's activities, all thoughts about their being impossible, how could he have done that, ceased in him. Now he is instructing the cowherd men with the same words." So he's going to tell the cowherd men the same things that Gaugamuni had told him. So these verses are actually from the 8th chapter of the 10th canto, 13 through 18. So there's 6 verses. So Gaugamuni had said, "Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he has appeared in a blackish color. For many reasons, this beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call this child Vasudeva. For this son of yours, there are many forms and names according to his transcendental qualities and activities. These are known to me, but people in general do not understand them. To increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd men of Gokul, this child will always act auspiciously for you, and by his grace only you will surpass all difficulties. Anena Sarva Durgani." All by him, because of him, Sarva Durgani, all difficult circumstances, Yayam Anja Tirishyata, you will easily overcome them by Krishna's grace. 20. "O Nanda Maharaj, as recorded in history," this, again, these are the words of Gaugamuni, he's just reciting them. "When there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra having been dethroned, and when honest people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to curb the rogues and to protect the people and enable them to flourish. Demons cannot harm the demigods, who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to all auspicious Krishna cannot be defeated by enemies. Therefore, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayana. He is as good as God. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayan. Thus, you should not be astonished by his activities." 23. Nanda Maharaj continued, "After Garga Rishi spoke these words to me and returned home, I began to consider that Krishna, who keeps us free from trouble, is actually an expansion of Narayana.
We'll read the comment of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur here. 23.
So he's answering their question. They're asking him, is he an ordinary boy or is he the Supreme? And he repeats the words of Gauga Muni. And he's saying that he must be an expansion of Narayana. That's his conclusion. Here's Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Nanda Maharaj continued, I consider Krishna, who removes our suffering, to be invested with Lord Narayan's power, Narayanasya Angsam.
Text 24. Sukadeva Goswami speaks here. Having heard Nanda Maharaj relate the statement of Gauga Muni, the residents of Vrindavan became enlivened because this Narayanam Angsa, this portion of Lord Narayan, of the Supreme Lord, was dwelling amongst them, and he loved them so much, and they loved him so much. They became enlivened. The perplexity was gone, and they worshipped Nanda and Lord Krishna with great respect. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that in this verse, the word Anarchu indicates that the residents of Vrindavan honored Nanda and Krishna with such offerings as fragrance, garlands, and garments brought from their homes. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur adds that the residents of Vrindavan honored Nanda and Krishna with loving offerings of jewels and gold coins. Apparently, Lord Krishna was playing in the forest when this conversation took place, so when he returned home, the residents of Vrindavan encouraged him by decorating him with beautiful yellow garments, necklaces, armlets, earrings, and crowns, and by shouting, all glories to the jewel of Vrindavan. And then the final verse in this chapter. Now some of the acharyas say that this verse was spoken by Nanda Maharaj, and some say it was spoken by Maharaj Purikit. And then we'll read the comment of Jiva Goswami and the comment of Nanda Maharaj and the purport here. And then, so this is what's either spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Purikit, or by Nanda Maharaj. Indra became angry when his sacrifice was disrupted, and thus he caused rain and hail to fall on Gokul, accompanied by lightning and powerful winds, all of which brought great suffering to the cowherds, the animals, and the women there. When Lord Krishna, who is by nature always compassionate, saw the condition of those who had only him as their shelter, he smiled broadly, and he lifted Govanand Hill with one hand, just as a small child picks up a mushroom to play with it. In this way, he protected the cowherd community. May he, Govinda, the lord of the cows and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, may he be pleased with us. Purport. The word Indra means lord or king. Just open the door a bit. Thus, in this verse, Krishna is pointedly called Indra Gavam, the lord of the cows. In fact, he is the real Indra, the real ruler of everyone, and the demigods are merely his servants representing his supreme will. It is apparent from this and the previous verses in this chapter that Lord Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill made quite an impression on the simple cowherd men of Vrindavan, and they repeatedly remembered this feat. Certainly, anyone who soberly and objectively considers the activities of young Krishna will surrender to him and become his eternal devotee in loving devotional service. That is the rational conclusion one should come to after reading this chapter. Srila Jiva Goswami comments.
Oh,
Sridhar Swami's comment to this verse. Remembering the lifting of Govardhan Hill and all of its accompanying features, Nanda prayed for the satisfaction of Krishna, Sri Krishna, whose opulences are now manifested in the verse beginning Devi, that's the verse we just read. With that anger caused by the disruption of the sacrifice, when Indra caused rain with lightning bolts, hailstones, and very fierce winds, that Gokul, which had Krishna as its shelter, in which the cowherds, the animals, and the women also were feeling distress, that cowherd community, of whom he himself was the only shelter, seeing that Krishna, being compassionate and smiling, thus exhibited his self-confidence, and he uplifted the hill just as a child lifts a mushroom to play with. Doing so with a single hand, he held it and protected the coward community. In this way, he is the destroyer of the false pride of Mahendra of Indra. May that Sri Krishna be satisfied with us. Jiva Goswami says, so he's saying, Sridhar Swami is saying that it is Nanda Maharaj who spoke that verse. And Jiva Goswami says, again, after remembering the pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill, and remembering Sri Krishna, who on that occasion exhibited extreme mercy towards Gokul, Nanda Maharaj prays for his mercy as the final goal of his own human endeavor, thus hinting that Krishna is his own worshipable deity, with this verse beginning Devi. Now Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has a different angle on this verse. He says, Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikit, may that Krishna who lifted Govardhan, and may that Krishna who protected the Brijbasis from the disturbances caused by hunger, hail, and rain arising from Indra's wrath, and who expertly initiated the worship of Govardhan to cut down the demigod's pride, may he be pleased with us. In the same way, may he who protects you from the lightning bolt curse of Sringi's anger, that was the one who cursed him to die within 7 days, with the essence of the Vedas in the form of this Bhagavata, who is expert at starting the sacrifice of listening to the Bhagavatam, and who destroys the pride of the Brahmanas devoid of bhakti, may that Lord, who is your shelter, may he be pleased with us. In this way, by praying for Krishna's mercy, Sukadeva Goswami indicates to Maharaj that Maharaj Prickett should apply this to himself. And also we should apply it to ourselves. Sukadeva Goswami said, becoming extremely angry over the stopping of his sacrifice, Indra caused torrential rains to inundate Vrindavan. Seeing that the animals, men and women, who had taken shelter of him alone were severely afflicted with rain, hail, lightning, and wind, Krishna smiled slightly and effortlessly held Govardhan Hill aloft, like a child lifting a mushroom to protect the land of Vrindavan. May the Lord of the cows, Indra Gavam, who destroyed Indra's false pride, may he be pleased with you, me, and all the assembled listeners. So that's a blessing of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on everyone who is assembled and listening. Because if Krishna is pleased with someone, then there can only be success for that person. Okay, thank you very much. So that is one ending, a second ending of the pastime. And in the next class, we'll begin a third ending. For Indra, who has understood something of Krishna's power, having seen him lift Govardhan Hill, he feels very remorseful. He feels fearful, remorseful, full of lamentation, and he's going to approach Krishna and beg for forgiveness. So we'll begin that, chapter 27, Krishna willing, next Wednesday. Any questions or comments? Yes.
What does it mean when different commentators give different say it differently? That wasn't exactly contradictory, right? Because you say that the other commentator said something different.
What?
In the last verse.
Yes.
Some people said something. Some people said the other.
Well, this is the wonderful nature of the Bhagavatam, that it can be explained in many, many different ways. It's the nature of Sanskrit. It's the nature of the Bhagavatam. It happens many, many, many times that the commentators say
different things,
and each one is wonderful. And they're always careful to avoid conflicting rasas that interfere with the sentiment. So both the comments increase the sentiment and the sweetness of the Bhagavatam. Yes?
So does Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur indicate that for Nanda Maharaj to actually think that way would decrease his vatsalya feelings?
Well, there was I thought it was in there. Somehow I didn't read it. But there. Let's see if I can find it.
Because he'd be thinking of the greatness of Krishna.
But the knowledge comes to the residents of Vrindavan of Krishna's position now and then. But the sweetness, that's like Mother Yasoda. She saw Krishna open his mouth and saw the universal form within Krishna. But the sweetness and the potency, intensity of her relationship with Krishna, it very quickly covered that up.
I guess if they didn't see, it would be like if they were sort of just simple. Very simple.
But here's a comment from an earlier comment. I meant to read this. Which from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explaining Nanda Maharaj's thoughts. Some. Ah, yes. Through the influence acquired by this child of mine previously, my worshipable deity Sri Narayan, out of great mercy to me, with the intention of destroying all the dangers which have confronted me, is himself appearing as empowered within this boy. When the coward men doubt these words, he makes them aware of the facts by these words received. When the coward men doubt these words, Nanda Maharaj then makes them aware of the facts, the fact of these words received from Sri Gaugamuni. With this idea in mind, he speaks the verse beginning with Sri Atam, where he says, so he's not thinking of him as Narayan exactly. But according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is the potency of Lord Narayan has entered within him, something empowered by Narayan. But in any case, they forget that very, very quickly, because the sweetness of the relationship is so strong. And the example that I always give is that, say, if who is the wealthiest person you can think of in the world right now? Everyone will say, yes, Bill Gates. Pearly Gates. But in any case, see how much fun it is even immediately talking about someone who's wealthy. Everyone wants to immediately get into it. So if he walked in here right now, everyone would smile at him, stand up, offer him a fine seat, walk over the deities, this and that. But everyone would be thinking, what? How could we somehow or another get some money from him? No matter what, that's all everyone would be thinking. No matter how big our smile was, and we're going. And he knows that because he knows because he's used to it. This is how everyone thinks when they meet him. Now, when he's with his mother, for example, it's different. She may even sometimes be aware that, oh yes, he's so wealthy, he's got so many billions and billions and billions of dollars. But her vatsalya prem, her motherly love,
overpowers that, and she'll say, "Oh, you remember?" Because she always thinks of him as a little boy, and she carried him around, and he was like this when he was young, and he did that when he was young. And then every once in a while, the thought comes into her mind, perhaps, "Oh, he's so wealthy." But sometimes she's going to be thinking, "Oh, you're hungry. You haven't worked. You haven't eaten for a while. And he, you know, I should cook you something. You better eat now or you're going to get sick. You work so hard," or something like that. He can have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of servants serving the hundreds of servants who are serving the hundreds of servants who are doing these kind of things. But the love and the depth of the relationship that she has for him will cause her to act in a different way. So if that's true on the motherly level here in this world, what to speak of in the spiritual world. So sometimes the knowledge may come through, but it's overpowered by the sweetness and the depth and the intimacy of the relationship.
It isn't actually appealing to the mother.
What to speak of the son? Because everyone's approaching him with the big smiles, wanting his money, but the mother doesn't need that. She just loves him. And the whatever opulence will come naturally. But she doesn't want that. And that's why Krishna, that's why one reason he loves the residents of Vrindavan so much, because their love is so intense, they don't want anything from him. Everyone else, they go to church, they go to temples, "Please give me," they put their money in the donation box. But they want more than they give. Everyone is like that, and therefore what attracts one to Krishna, what attracts Krishna to reveal his true nature is anyabhilasita sanyam gyanakamara navrita, that the devotees don't want anything from Krishna. They only want to please him. They don't even want liberation. They may even suffer, and they don't ask Krishna to remove the suffering. This is the abhideya tattva. This is the process that Krishna causes Krishna by his mercy to reveal himself to us. That nadanam nadanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani. I don't want wealth. I don't want fame. I don't want poetry. I don't want followers. I don't want this. I don't want that. I don't even want liberation. I'm willing to continuously take birth in this world, janmanij. All I want is to be your servant. Now that degree of unselfishness, that degree of love, is really rare. But that is the process of attaining Krishna. I don't want anything but to please you. And by that process, with that type of love, Krishna reveals himself. If we want something else, Krishna will give us that. Out of his kindness, yayatamam prapadyante. But the residents of Vrindavan, their love is so pure, there is not a speck of any selfishness there. And therefore, they're asking, how is it that we love this boy so much? And not only that, how is it that he loves us so much? And this is the reason. Because their love is so special and so refined and so pure. Look what he does. He holds up a hill just to be with them. Naturally, we want to be with those we love, and naturally, we don't want to be with those who we don't love, and naturally, we don't want to be with those who love us but want our money. We don't want it. Who want something from us. "Oh, so happy to see you. Thank you very much. It's so nice to see you. So happy to see you. Could you do this for me? Could you do this for me? Could you do this for me? I have this problem in my this problem. I have this financial problem, this health problem. My children have this problem." No wonder he stays far away. But the residents of Vrindavan, padam ekam na gacchati, he won't leave. Not even one step. So who wants who has so much surrender, so much faith, so much love, free from all envy, who really love Krishna in this way, those souls can be in Vrindavan. Krishna wants to bring us there. But we're not so sure we want to go, if that's the price. Did you want to?
It doesn't quite make sense, does it?
What?
That we're not sure we want to go. When you're here.
When you just sat in a place for a long time and become conditioned, you see the things I like to see now, you know, it's better over there.
Means our eyes are closed. We should open our eyes and see what it's really like. Or just keep television on all the time. You don't have to think about it. And that's what people do. They take alcohol, they take this, they take that, they go to the movies, they play on the internet, they get absorbed in the passion of making money, of becoming, just so they don't have to think, to keep oneself intoxicated. So they don't have to think about what the world really means, because it means what? Death. No one wants to think about that. And it's inevitable whether we think about it or not. We want to get absorbed in when you're growing up, there's the demands of the body, then you get married and there's the demands of the family. And then you're getting old, and then your kids have their kids, and then the grandchildren, and it's just set up that if you don't want to think about what's going to happen, you have all facility until something terrible happens, and then terror enters the heart, because then you realize, what have I done? I've just accumulated a huge bag of zeros that are ultimately worth zero, no matter how many I've accumulated. It's all worth zero. Very, very, it's actually when one gets hit with reality, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. Terror enters the heart. Unless one already has his relationship with Krishna developed and practiced, that, okay, I'm in his hands, like I've always been in his hands. So therefore the relevance. Therefore, out of kindness, Krishna comes to the world in so many different forms. Holy books, holy people, holy places, holy deities, holy names, holy people, to wake us up. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada was not very pleasant to listen to many times, because he was so strongly condemning the material world, the materialistic life, fools, rascals. This is the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. But to get here, we had to go through the other parts and hear what life is like. We had to go through the 3rd canto, the 4th canto, the 5th canto, 6th canto, Yamadutas, on and on.
When somebody asked Prabhupada why the death rate is so high in India.
Yeah. 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 The people become atheists when they see, you know, a tsunami come and wipe out 250,000 people. It's so silly, in a sense. How could God do that? But he's going to wipe out 6 million people. the 6 million that are on the planet now. Each and every one of them. It's 100%. You know, and now we can sit back and think, oh, anyway. But when it starts, when one gets older or when something tragic happens to us or our beloveds, terror enters the heart unavoidably, and we cry. But there is no safety or security on the material level. Might as well just accept it and deal with it. There's nothing we can do. The body. What was that comment? That just as time sucks out youth from everyone, just casually planted there in a few words, something to think about. Time sucks out the youth from everyone. When life is sucked out, youth, and then old age, death, everyone, no exemptions. It's terrifying. So we should make our shelter very strong. So be brave enough to face reality, because when we're dealing with reality, we have no choice. We can put ourselves in illusion, but that we can only do that temporarily, because if there's a struggle between reality and illusion, who is going to win? Reality always wins. That is the meaning of reality. Okay. Something to think about as I think about these things, and act appropriately and intelligently. Thank you very much.